Well, hello out there, and it's the Pinkie Pod coming at you on a Thursday night. Well, that's when I'm recording, which is rare to do it in the evening, with half a pint of Guinness in, which isn't really much when you think about it. It's not even quite 5%. Y'all ever had a Guinness? Yeah, it's not that strong, but it's yummy. And I'm, in case this is your first time listening, I basically do whatever I feel like, whatever I think is interesting. It could be UFOs, it could be ghosts, it could be frogging, P-H-R-O, that is. If you don't know what it is, you should go look at the episodes. Possessions, the history of tarot, Houdini stuff, just whatever, true crime, all kinds of stuff, conspiracy theories. Go through my episode list. There's got to be something in there you'll like. And I'm your host, Sherry Wright. Oh my God, my longtime listeners are going, what the hell is going on here? She's never done formal introductions. I don't know. I'm in a mood. Maybe I should do this every time. I think I've been doing this all wrong. Anyway, how are you out there? This weekend, I am going to the Renaissance Festival. I'm going to dress up, and it's decided it's going to be probably 88 degrees. Oh boy, going to need a few more pints for that one. I'll be sure to share some pictures and let you know if I survive. But here I am, ready to tell you something that I think is interesting. Picture this. You come upon a cracked, uneven road, and it looks as if something underneath is trying to break through the asphalt and escape. As you venture further in, the air thickens. Ash, or is it snow, falls from a quiet sky, a sky you can't even see. Between fog and particles, visibility is next to zero. But as you walk on, you can feel the growing heat. Beads of sweat form on your upper lip. There's no sun, but it's hot. Hotter. You pause in the middle of what should be a bustling small-town main street. There should be a barber, grocer, a bar. But all is silent, because everything is empty. Buildings stand but have the air of being abandoned at a moment's notice. Someone's doll lays in the street by a pink bicycle fallen on the sidewalk. It's all so eerily silent. Until, so is this Silent Hill or Centralia, Pennsylvania? What you tell me. So, if you listened to last week's episode, Google Roulette 2, you will know that of the several things that I read off of the web pages that popped up, Silent Hill or Centralia was one of the things that popped up. And I mentioned this. Well, I decided to go ahead and do a full episode. So shall we just get to it? In 1999, Team Silent, a group from Konami Computer Entertainment Tokyo, releases Silent Hill in what becomes the first of many in a survival horror series. The premise: Harry Mason searches for his adopted daughter in an American town called Silent Hill, which is said to be in West Virginia, until he stumbles on a cult holding a ritual and finds out his daughter's true origins. Now, it had positive reviews, mostly, I think, and is still considered by a lot of people to be one of the greats. It shunned some of the typical B-horror elements and was more psychological and atmospheric. And there was a lot of a Japanese team, as I said, working on this. So not only have there been several more games, there's a 2001 graphic novel, a 2006 movie, which I actually thought was pretty good. I've watched it a few times. Another movie in 2012, which it was okay. I went to it mostly because Kit Harington, Jon Snow, if you know Game of Thrones, emo Snow, Jon Snow, we love him. he was actually in it. And it wasn't as good as the first one, but you know, it was okay. It was more a shock film, I guess you would say, you know, the typical jump horror. And there have been several reimaginings of the original game, apparently. So that original game has five endings, and one of them is actually a joke ending. I don't remember what it is, but it is. Now that I've told you all this about the games, though, what you really want to know is there a real town? Well, yeah, I pretty much already gave that spoiler alert, didn't I? Interestingly, a simple Wikipedia page doesn't actually seem to mention the town when you look up the games, or at least one of the pages I looked at. It does mention that some creatures' names and designs from the game are inspired by works such as The Lost World by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and even Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. But maybe we'll get into that more later. So, what about this real Silent Hill, Centralia, Pennsylvania? So, this town, I need to stop saying so. You know when you finally realize there's certain words you keep repeating and you're like, well, that's cringy. And maybe I'll just cut those out when I'm editing and then you'll be like, what the hell is she talking about? I kept saying so. Okay, back to it. The town of Centralia is in the anthracite coal region of the Appalachian Mountains. Columbia County is, and it's at the. And then I got so obsessed with, like, I need to cut out the word so that I totally screwed up the whole thing I wrote here. This town is in the anthracite coal region of the Appalachian Mountains in Columbia County at the intersection of Pennsylvania Routes 61 and 42. To the south is Ashland, and to the west is Shamokin and Mount Carmel. It was founded in 1866 by Alexander Ray, R-E-A, Re, Ray. It was a coal mining town, I think that seems obvious, that by 1890 peaked in its population at almost 2,800 people. But listen to this, you guys. It had two theaters, five hotels, seven churches, 27 saloons. Maybe that's why they needed seven churches. But only one bank, so they had a monopoly, one post office, but 14 grocer or general stores. That's a lot of shit for such a small population. I mean, I grew up in a town of 1,200 and we didn't even have half of that. We didn't have a quarter of that. Do we even have a 16th of that? I mean, my goodness. So, oh, there I did it again. Now I'm going to be super conscious of it and probably say it all the time. I'm going to say that maybe the town had all of this because of workers coming in and out. Maybe some people were temporary, you know, coal miners. Maybe it was even sort of a travel destination. I'm not sure. I didn't get that far. I didn't see anything in the initial research. It was in decline by the mid-1900s, however. Demand for anthracite coal had dropped. By 1950, the population was maybe 2,000. People still loved raising their families there, and it was a very close-knit town. But now we get to May 27th, 1962, the day the town and its life and the lives of residents was irrevocably changed. Local firefighters were to clean the town landfill in preparation for Memorial Day. I guess it was full and stinky, and they couldn't have that. This was to be done by setting it on fire, and this landfill sat on top of an old mining pit. When they burnt it, the fire didn't fully extinguish. It's supposed to be a controlled burn. It kept smoldering, made its way to other abandoned mines around the pit. It grew, efforts to control it failed, and the fire began to move into town. It is still burning underground to this day. Why? It lit veins of coal, and apparently there is enough of that to be going all of these decades and for who knows how long. It makes me think of active volcanoes like in Hawaii. I don't know the, some people call her Pele, You know the one, that lava that is just constantly kind of flowing, and some of it's just dumping into the ocean, but sometimes it encroaches upon people's houses. By the 80s, carbon monoxide gas was seeping into the homes and sinkholes developed. It wasn't until 1984, y'all, when a voluntary program started to get people to move. We're talking 1962, 1984. Some people accepted buyout offers, and then their homes were leveled after they were gone. 1992, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania employed eminent domain to take control of all town property. Buildings were condemned, and leftover residents were asked to leave. But a few remained. They sued for their right to stay. I don't know why. I'm sure they had reasons. I'm sure they do. Not going to judge it. Those lawsuits lasted almost 20 years. More people left during that time or were evicted. It wasn't until 2013 that the lawsuits ended, and I guess there's 8 people left in the town who are allowed to stay as long as they live. A handful of buildings remain, and you have some streets and areas where it's like a reddish brownish sort of water comes through the cracks. A few homes are left. There are several graveyards, and now I guess only one church, which if I looked at the pictures and understood this correctly, and I think I already shared one previously, but I will share them again. I'll share it on my Instagram again, Pinky_podcast. Also, I'm on Twitter at PodPinky. That church, I think, is the inspiration for one of them in the movie anyway. And I think actually in the game, it looked like that, a white church. So it's still there. And as I said, the fires are still burning. But before I get to some of the theories, I should back up and tell you, because that description I gave you, you were probably picturing that this fire swept through and engulfed the town, right? And burnt it down. So how could they still live there all that time? It didn't do that. It was, from my understanding, more seeping underground and just, kind of insidious thing underneath your feet. It wasn't just blazing through the town. It wasn't that kind of fire. It's just, it's creepy and bizarre, and I'm just thinking it must be hot there all the time. I've never been there, but someone on my friends list on Facebook used to go there when she was a kid. And we were maybe going to get some stories from her, but I'm already recording this. But if I get those, I will be sure to update you. What was I going to do now? Now I'm really trying hard not to say so. Let's go to some theories on this fire. I gave you a little bit of the rundown about the garbage, right? The origins for that story come from a book, Fire Underground, by David Dekok, D-E-K-O-K. That's the prevailing theory. It wasn't legal by any means, and the dump was near Odd Fellows Cemetery. When they set it alight, as I kind of said before, it was supposed to be a controlled burn, but it burned deeper than they expected. And they had to come back days later to try to extinguish it again because the first time didn't work. And since they were illegal fires, there was probably motive to keep it quiet and maybe not call for more help or help from the state. Now, Dekok says there are other theories, but thinks that those are just confusing tales that are started by people to hide their knowledge of this original fire. There is a record of the borough authorizing this fire, but no method was mentioned for how they were going to do it. And DeCock apparently interviewed firemen who told them it was was common to set landfills on fire at the time. Again, illegally, but it was common. Number two, some say it was an accidental trash fire, of course. Some unknown trash hauler dumped a load of garbage that contained embers. Why embers? I don't know. But it definitely avoids blame of actually setting a purposeful fire. Number three, some say it was an old mine fire that rekindled, as in it had just been lurking in the older mines already, then emerged near Oddfellows Cemetery. So I think I'll have to agree that the landfill cleanup is the correct theory. It makes the most sense. It's the most straightforward. Oh shit, we started some shit, but we don't want to tell anybody. Because I think a lot of people used to burn trash, maybe not in landfills like that, but I remember us having a burn barrel when I was little, when we were growing up in the backyard. And then there were times that you didn't do it because maybe it was dry and windy out, but we all had it. Does anybody else out there remember doing that? Or even if you weren't in a little town, maybe you did it on your farm or something. What I'd like to know now, though, is are you wondering, can you visit this town? And is it haunted? Yes, you can visit with caveats. It's dangerous. And as far as being haunted, maybe, according to some people. Because, of course, with all of that legend around it, people are going to say that, right? They like to seek it out, mostly, though, because of Silent Hill. It's usually how they find out about the town. And Centralia has more people in cemeteries, I read on one thing, than it may have ever had in population. It certainly got more than 8 people, though. I think that's what they really meant. And I'm like, well, that's not saying much. But there are areas there still devoid of life, not even plants or trees, due to the fires. The cracked highway that you may have seen in the movie or the games is very real. I will share those pictures again as well. It's a 1-mile stretch of Route 61 that was closed in the early 90s. A 4-lane highway, as a matter of fact, that is now rippled and cracked. Fissures have opened and steam quite often issues from them. Graffiti buffs have painted the road all over the place, sometimes with weird creatures. Now, a lot of people think it's haunted just because of the game. It's not as if a bunch of people in the town died suddenly in the fire, because as I told you, it didn't just sweep through the town. That's not what happened. It's, you know, it wasn't some monstrous blaze that ripped through. And people stayed there, as I told you, for decades. Someone named Roger Avery, who wrote the film version of Silent Hill, has actually confirmed that Centralia was the inspiration, or a inspiration, at least for the film. But there are other claims. And like I said, you can see why, because I'm sure that is spooky. A perpetually burning underground fire, how is that not spooky? Some people have even called it a gateway to hell. I'm sure the people who live there appreciate that a lot. Maybe they think they're demons. Some of the stories are simply from people who visited, of course, and were understandably freaked out and ran away. They thought they heard maybe an odd noise, and I'm over here going, well, define odd, because I think that with a fire burning underneath me basically the whole time, you might hear some weird shit. Some people thought they saw, you know, something or a person, but it could have just been one of the residents or another visitor, who knows. And people thought they were being watched. Again, maybe the 8 people who live there are like, yo, what you doing? And then of course some people are like, we saw a thing. And I'm like, was it Pyramid Head? Did you hear the sirens first? As long as you didn't hear the sirens, you're okay. If you know, you know, you know what I'm talking about. There is a story that was posted once somewhere online by Ruth Ederson, or about Ruth Ederson, who was visiting in the fall of 1988. She said that she and her friend saw a couple of people walking out of the smoke, because I guess there's smoky areas there sometimes, and they were in mining helmets. They came up out of a large subsidence hole behind the graveyards and then dematerialized. You know me if you've listened to my podcast at all, and in case you haven't, I'm totally down with the idea that ghosts exist, but I'm also not pointing at everything and saying, oh, it's got to be a ghost. I'm definitely not like that ancient alien guy, like, it couldn't be anything other than, dude, it could be like 100 other things, bless his heart. I do believe in them, but I don't think everything is. This could have just been two dangerously brave explorers and the smoke swallowed them up. You know, it could have just been people doing who knows what. It could have been matrixing, you know, when your brain or your eyes, you know, see patterns in things. Particularly happens in mirrors that people claim to be haunted. But who knows? But there is some other stories. Why the hell am I? Are grammar good? Hold on, please. Now, what was I saying? There are other stories, and shall we get to them? And these I decided not to just handwrite every single one of them. All of that other stuff I wrote myself. But for these stories, I'm like, I'm not going to just, I want to tell them to you verbatim. So I am at offroaders.com, and it's specifically about Centralia. Scott Saylor of Mays Landing, New Jersey, wrote in an email, I visited Centralia last weekend with a couple of friends, and I thought I might share a very weird experience I had while exploring the town. We were there for about an hour and a half, and we're checking out the interesting locations that I heard about, like the burning hillside, the crack in Route 61, and the streets without homes. We were in the area next to an old cemetery on the east side of town, east of Route 61. We had just checked out the old tombstones and were getting a whiff of smoke from the east of that, so we walked down the old gravel road to look around. We found a slag-covered hillside with steam coming out of it and were pretty fascinated by some fossils we found when we heard what sounded like a voice saying something inaudible from down below where we were. Okay, I'm going to be the jerk that points out that if it was inaudible, you wouldn't have heard it. You wouldn't. The word would be unintelligible. I had to. Okay. So there were three of them, apparently. It goes on to say, all three of us heard it. Also, by the way, it says auditable. So, you know. We figured it was someone else checking out the area, too, so we sort of ignored it. Then we heard it again, a little more clearly. A few words, and it sort of sounded like, leave this place. Because of course it did, right, dear listeners? It's always that. At that moment, the hill we were standing on started steaming more than it had been a few moments before, and it really stunk like rotten eggs. Parenthetical, sulfur, I guess. Yes, sir, you would be correct. Sulfur smells like rotten eggs. Well, it sort of spooked us, so we figured we better head back to the car. As we were walking back in the area of the cemetery, we heard it again. Not the same words and not clear, but something like, why? Why did you do that? What was even weirder was that it wasn't like someone was yelling it out of the bushes. It was quiet and kind of closer, and we couldn't figure out the direction it was coming from. Too weird. We got back to our car and didn't see any other cars or people the whole time we were there. We left and weren't sure what to make of it. We really weren't sure we wanted to talk about it. All I know is I'm not going back. When I got home, I found out that the area where we were walking was near the location that was where the fire started across from the cemetery. I just thought I'd let you know about it. Something is not right about that place. That would mean they were probably at Oddfellow Cemetery, if that is where it started. Here's another one. Jim and his girlfriend Lori emailed this in the fall of 1999. Hi, my name is Jim. About a month ago, my girlfriend Lori and I were coming back from the Nobles, and we decided to take 61 home and stop at Centralia to take a look, as we did once before. So they've been there before. First, let me say, we're not superstitious. Oh, here it comes. It always starts that way. In fact, we're quite the opposite. We like checking out abandoned places and old buildings, old cemeteries, and that sort of thing. We've seen a lot of old abandoned homes over the years, but the one we checked out in Centralia about a month ago really gave us a fright. It was a white abandoned twin home. I'm not sure what they mean by twin home. I might be able to picture it. I'll have to Google that. And it was up on a side street on a hill. Uh-oh. There were two units. Oh, okay. And both had red numbers. Do they mean duplex? I think he means duplex. That's interesting. Twin home. I've never heard it said like that. Is that a East Coast thing? Somebody let me know. Or is it just a gym thing? Okay. So we decided to check it out. What were they saying, though? It was two units. Both had red numbers sprayed on the front, which indicated, from what I gathered, that the homes were probably set to be demolished. So that's why they decided to check it out. The back door was open, so we went in. Some of the first floor windows were boarded up, making it dark, but we explored the old house a little. He sure likes the word old. We were on the second floor in the hallway, near the stairs that led up and down to the first and third floor. The door was open, leading up to the third floor. Lori was in the hallway while I was at the top of the steps that lead downstairs. At that point, we heard footsteps. I can never resist doing that with the, you know, sorry, not sorry. Coming down the stairs from the third floor. It sounded to me that the steps, I'm reading that verbatim, it sounded to me that the steps were coming down the ceiling above the steps going down to the first floor. Okay, let me try to picture this. The steps were coming down the ceiling above the steps going down. Okay, the landing on the next floor. We have three stories. He's on the second, so he's saying that those steps were on the landing above him. Okay, I got it now. Oh, Jim. My first thought was someone was coming down out of the attic or third floor bedroom. At first, we were startled and thought someone else was in the house. Yeah, you know, logical to think. Sounded like they were about to reach the second floor hallway. Lori looked into the stairwell, expecting to see someone. There wasn't anyone there! At the same time, I looked down the steps to the first floor and saw nobody. We just stared at each other for a few seconds. I said, "You want to leave?" She said, "Yes." We made a beeline down to the back door where we came in and out to the car. Oh, bless you and your email writing, sir. That was verbatim again. We made a beeline down to the back door where we came in and out to the car. We drove about 100 feet. He's scared, right? He's still scared. That's why it's like that. We drove about 100 feet and stopped to look back at the house, looking at the windows. I mean, we expected to see someone looking out at us. Nothing, though. Oh, I'm so disappointed. Are you disappointed? I was waiting for them to say, "There was a face in the window." So basically he says, like someone walked down those stairs, but we couldn't see them. Freaked us out. Anyway, I don't know what to make of that. You wouldn't know who used to live in that house. Not even sure where it was or what the numbers were, but if ever I thought a house was haunted, it would be that one. Sort of changed my impression of old vacant homes. Jim, you're supposed to be skeptical, and all it took was some creaky stairs.
I think the off-roaders here know, if I recall, when I first came across this website, they might even live, they live in Pennsylvania anyway, or they know a lot, and they know a lot about the area. So that's why they're asking this person, do you know who used to live there? So, oh, I did it. It's okay to do it once in a while, right? The person who runs this site finishes up by saying whether these stories have any validity or alternate explanations is difficult to say. Sometimes people see what they want to see. Some folks believe they are more open to these types of experiences. In the end, everyone believes what they want to believe. Some believe Centralia is haunted. For some, that is what draws them there. For others, it is a reason to never visit in the first place. I have a little extra history from this page that I scrolled up. It was, they say the story of Centralia, before it was an official town, began in 1841. It was a coal boomtown community that people called Bull's Head. And then it was incorporated as a borough of Centralia in 1866 by the local coal companies. And, you know, I already told you about the anthracite. So that's a little extra about the origins of the town, or the borough, as they call it. I wanted to tell you then a little bit more possibly about the movie. So Centralia has been an inspiration for those books, horror films, and even documentaries, of course. 2004, director Christoph Gans and screenwriter Roger Avery began writing the script that would be the first in the series of the Silent Hill films. The 2006 psychological horror film was an adaptation of Konami's 1999 video game. I played, I think, actually the second game, and I mentioned that in the last podcast of how it was really good with atmosphere because you'd be, or maybe it was the first one or the second one was just really similar, but you're walking around in Silent Hill and you really can't see anything, and it's dark and smoky and foggy, and you had this like little transistor radio was one of your earliest tools, because when you're walking around you have to find them. You go into an old school or an old hospital, and that's where those freaky nurses are that I told you about. One, they twitch, you know, when you walk by, and I know it's supposed to make you jump, and then you bump into them, and then they're all set off, and you're toast. I still want to dress up as one of those for Halloween one day. But you have to find flashlights and everything else, you know, you have to find anything that's going to help you. But you have your little radio early on, and whenever one of these zombie-like things or whatever or something is near, you can't see it, but your radio will, and it would make you jump. Because you'd be walking along and it's all quiet and you can't see anything, and then your radio around, you've got it like clipped around your neck, you're, oh my god, where is it? And then just come out of nowhere and grab you. Yeah. Actually, just like the movie. They did that in the movie. If you haven't seen that first Silent Hill film, it's actually surprisingly good, with some very good actors in it. And for another Game of Thrones reference, because I know a lot of my listeners probably watch that, you have Ned Stark. Ned Stark is your guy. Sean Bean is in it. So, good acting. And I knew the woman's name, the lead woman, but she does a very good job. You know how some people just breathe hard and that's supposed to make you think that they're scared? She really does more than that and really sells some desperation to me in parts of that film. I was really impressed. I don't think it's easy to convince people that you're genuinely scared in these horror films, but she does. So I recommend it if you like horror films or if you're just curious. In the movie, rather than strictly following a man, it's actually, her name is Rose, and she takes her adopted daughter Sharon to Silent Hill because, let me see if I remember, because you know, there's some mystery about her past, and Sharon seems to do these sleepwalking in such a scary way that I think in the opening of the film you're introduced to that by the fact that they can't find her in the house and they go running out and she's about to walk into a very busy highway. So she has like these night terrors and sleepwalking, and then draws these really crazy pictures, these really dark, scary pictures. And Rose starts to look up things about her and comes across the name of Silent Hill somehow. And she gets it in her head that I'm going to go there and I'm going to take Sharon with me. Okay, you with me? And she comes across that fucked up road, and I think she almost crashes or something, because she ends up, yeah, I think she hits her head and then wakes up later and Sharon is gone. Okay, there's your setup. Sharon is gone. And so she has to start wandering around the town looking for her. There is a cult involved, and the woman who's the head of that is such a stellar actress as well. I'm not going to tell you anymore in case you haven't seen it, because I think you should watch it. So the director, Gans, described Silent Hill's concept of the town's connection to the child. There's another child. I don't want to spoil it. I'm trying to kind of read this to you here without being totally spoily. You have a town of people trapped in dark dreams, to quote him, and she inflicts onto the town what those people did to her body. That is, to me, the meaning of darkness. The appearance of the town is corrupted in the way that her own flesh was wounded. I'm not going to tell you who she is. I'm going to let you have that vague quote. Avery used Centralia as his inspiration for the town of Silent Hill, modeled after the town's unique features, including the Gothic-style church. So there's my confirmation for you. They did use the model of that church that actually still stands there. And Avery says that his father, who was a mining engineer, had actually told him stories about a raging underground fire that released toxic gases, which forced residents to abandon their town. So I think he didn't know what the town was, but he'd heard stories. There is an article by writer Evan V. Simon, S-Y-M-O-N, and he wrote, "I live in Centralia, Pennsylvania. It's America's creepiest ghost town." And a quote from him is, "Underneath Centralia, the endless fire has created an environment as deadly as the surface of Saturn. While the gases aren't lethal up above, they still play hell with the residents' health. Poison gas has even built up in some citizens' basements. One guy explained how that all simply became part of the weather in Centralia. Quote, we always had smoke, and my wife felt sick if she was near it. We stay away from it. It's bad news. Only the tourists go into the damn thing." So there you go. And they go on here on this. This is normalparanormal.org, and they talk about the history that I already gave you. Some of the residents, it says here, tried to fight, what was it? They have a little extra here. A majority of the inhabitants did agree to the government program, you know, when I told you about the eminent domain and condemning the buildings and, you know, buying out the residents. And over $42 million were spent to relocate the residents. And massive bulldozers demolished approximately 500 homes or more, with the remaining ones being condemned, maybe like our friend Jim there of the bad letter writing. Oh, I love you, Jim. I'm just teasing. There were conspiracy theories, of course, that always come up around such things. Rumors that the government and the coal companies wanted to drive out the citizens just to claim the rich anthracite veins below. The dwindling residents unsuccessfully fought back in court. In 2002, the U.S. Postal Service revoked Centralia's zip code 17927, which forced locals to receive their mail via post office box. The final act in this tragedy occurred in 2009 when Governor Ed Rendell began formal eviction of the remaining citizens. But I told you there was I don't know if this is a separate lawsuit, because the other one said, and that's a person in Pennsylvania, that some of them must have won because there are a few people still there. I'd read elsewhere there were maybe 10. This one said 8. 61 that ran through town is closed and rerouted. Little more description here. Cracks ripped across the paved asphalt. Hot blasts of steam shot through the highway. Residents were choked out by fumes of carbon monoxide and acrid smoke. Transportation Department abandoned a three quarters mile to a mile of Route 61, and it became known as Graffiti Highway. Over the years, the road attracted gawkers, curiosity seekers who want to see the smoldering and abandoned mountainside, or to come spray paint the graffiti-strewn roadway. 2017, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania began to target curious onlookers, citing trespassers on the infamous graffiti highway. Blah, blah, blah. I'm starting to lose it. I think I need a drink of Guinness. Hold on. Okay. Another quote here. With any strange or unusual occurrence comes rumors and stories. Centralia is no different in that respect. Walking amid the ruins of this modern-day ghost town gives one the feeling of supernatural forces working underfoot. From visitors to the town, stories arose from these ashes. Some were stories from visitors who left in fear after thinking they saw a person or thing, heard odd sounds, and some felt they were being watched. Others go as far as to say Centralia is the gateway to hell. Imaginations can run wild. As Centralia becomes a modern-day ghost town and the fire encroaches upon the graveyards of the abandoned town, rumors have circulated that Centralia is haunted. You know, possible, right? Like, if you want to say that it's disturbing the dead, but if they're already at rest, I don't think it should matter. There's kind of a funny picture here of someone posing in the crack of this highway with the smoke and acting like they're being swallowed up. Is kind of funny. I wonder if they got in trouble for that. So that was normalparanormal.com. I feel like there was a little bit more I was going to tell you maybe about the video game. In the first game, and this is like clear back, like PlayStation 1, utilizes real-time 3D environments. To mitigate limitations, though, of this hardware, because, you know, you look at it now, it's pretty old school, developers liberally used fog and darkness to muddle the graphics. But it was to great effect, let me tell you. It works. The estimated budget of the first game was $3 to $5 million. Silent Hill 2 was $7 to $10 million. They say Sato is the person who is in charge. Did I say his name? I can't find. Oh, I need to go back. The director, the scenario of the first one was by director Kichiro Toyama. The second one was done by CGI director Takeyoshi Sato, who based it on the novel Crime and Punishment, with individual members of his team collaborating on the actual scenario. And the main writing was done by Hiroyuki Owaku and Sato. That's pretty cool. Crime and Punishment, huh? I didn't know that one. So Sato says that the development team intended to make Silent Hill a masterpiece rather than a traditional sales-oriented game, and that they opted for an engaging story, one that would persist over time, similar to successful literature. Other influences that the games have drawn from are Jacob's Ladder, Phantoms, Session 9, Alien, Stephen King's The Mist, and the art of Francis Bacon. Through cultivating a technique of inducing fear through more psychological levels of perception. So many sequences and tropes from the films, I guess, share identical concepts. The films and television series of American filmmaker David Lynch are also acknowledged to have influenced Team Silent during the initial game's production, especially that of Silent Hill 2. I know that's the one I play. So I feel like I read some other article that Twin Peaks was something that where they got some of this, some inspiration. And of course, You cannot leave out the influence of Japanese horror, which I used to watch a lot of that, Asian Tartan Extreme, because they have a lot more atmosphere setting in their films too. And you try to do them as American remakes and they're just not as good. And not to disparage them, but I think some of that is necessity because they don't do the giant budgets that we do for things, but that makes them clever and that makes them better, I think, and it makes them rely more heavily on storytelling and atmosphere and dread. Like, you know, tell me if you agree, because Asian horror films are usually pretty good. Plus, they have so many great superstitions they like to work on. The cult, which they called the Order, just the Order, apparently has various characteristics. You know, they kind of pulled different characteristics from different religions, like the origins of Christianity, Aztec rituals, Shinto shrines, and Japanese folklore. The names of the gods in the organization's religion, I think this is more in the games, mind you, were conceived by Hiroyuki Owaku, but they do have Aztec and Mayan motifs. And Owaku used pronunciations from those civilizations as a reference. Some religious items that appeared in the game series were conceived by the team. And for some others, various religions were used as a basis. The evil spirit-dispelling substance Aglaophotis, if I'm saying that correctly, which appears in the first installment and in Silent Hill 3, is based on an herb of a similar name in nature in the Kabbalah. How about that? And the name of a talisman called Seal of Metatron, okay, I know that one, references the angel Metatron. And if you're into this geeky stuff, let's keep going here. They feature various sound effects. Of course, a lot of them being ambient, as well as very effective silence. Let me tell you what, that's not called Silent Hill for nothing. The sound effects are used to great effect to get certain feelings and emotions from you. Urgency, displeasure, you know, a disturbance of your psyche. And it worked, as I recall. Auditory stuff can be so effective. And the series' former sound director, Akira Yamaoka, said that atmosphere is a very emphasized element of the series. If it had not been given importance, the production would have been impossible. So he really puts a lot of weight into the audio. And the game also features soundtracks scored by him. So that's pretty cool. The genres of the musical pieces range from industrial to trip-hop to rock. Some pieces include vocals by voice actress Mary Elizabeth McGlynn. The music of Silent Hill 3 and 4 contains performance and songwriting contributions from musician and voice actor Joe Ramirsa. Downpour and Book of Memories feature soundtracks scored by composer Daniel Licht. Downpour includes music belonging to the industrial genre and vocals by McGlynn, as well as Jonathan Davis of the band Korn. Spin-off video games based on the series include the visual novel, play novel, Silent Hill for Game Boy Advance, the arcade game, Silent Hill, the arcade, and the mobile games, Silent Hill, the escape, and Silent Hill, Orphan. And it's actually been praised for their graphics, atmosphere, and narratives. The first three installments received critical acclaim. The fourth game is, in general, receiving praise from critics. Later games, less well-received. That kind of happens, you know. It just, things go on too long sometimes, and they're just not the same anymore. You run out of stuff to do. I want to read this little bit about Silent Hill 2, because I'm positive that's the one I played. Received critical acclaim. Named 14th best game of PS2 by IGN, saying it preserved most of the original game's what might be out there fear, but with major advances to the graphics and sound, the game was able to deliver a far more immersive, frightful, and compelling storyline. Silent Hill 2 is considered one of the best horror games of all time by many, and it has featured on several best games ever lists from critics. It had a very dark, cerebral narrative and storytelling. Exploration handling of mature themes was praised. Concepts were praised. There's actually very mature subjects like incest and domestic abuse. The sound design and musical composition was praised. Atmospheric and frightening tone and direction. Fear-inducing intense gameplay. The graphics, use of symbolism and metaphors, and monster designs. All of these things are what people praised about it. It's considered the best installment in the Silent Hill game series by a lot of people, and goes on again to say a horror masterpiece. And I won't read about all of them. I don't remember for sure, but I think... Was Silent Hill 2 updated, y'all? That one needs to be remastered. I don't remember now, because I was thinking, I thought they remastered it, but that might have already been a few years ago, because I felt like I was thinking about picking it up again. I have a PS5, maybe I'll check into that, because the only one I think I would want to play would be that one, you know, the best one, right? I just had another little detail pop out at me, because my, how podcasts sometimes just connect. They just connect. The Duffer Brothers, you know them, Stranger Things, have, besides Montauk and MK Ultra, have apparently listed Silent Hill as one of their influences for Stranger Things. They noted that it inspired the Upside Down. I think I actually read that some other time and probably must have forgotten it. But that makes sense. That makes sense if you've ever played any of the games, even a little bit, or if you've seen that 2006 film, you'll be like, oh yeah, definitely, because I can see it. I see it. So there you go. Another influence. Silent Hill has influenced a lot of things. And comic book adaptations, apparently, now too. What do we got here? You got novels, you got comic books, you got Konami has announced Silent Hill themed pachinko machines. That was in 2015 and another one in 2019. I remember pachinko. There's a downloadable content for video games like Dead by Daylight and Dark Deception, Monsters Immortals, June 2020, March 2021. So that second film was based on Silent Hill 3. Yeah, it was not really great. I see that they say that the first film had mixed reviews, but everybody I know thought it was pretty damn good. One last thing, Dementium: The Ward, which was a survival horror game for the Nintendo DS, was originally pitched as a Silent Hill game. But it was turned down by Konami due to issues. That's all it says, just issues. Wow. I hope that you found any of that interesting. Now, if we want to get into the real gritty, I can read you this silenthill.fandom.com. It's a Silent Hill wiki. There's a Silent Hill Wikipedia, y'all, because of course there are. And this page is Inspirational Works of Silent Hill. They've got everything from literature, fiction, nonfiction, children's books, comics, theater plays, film, television, music, art, locations, people, character names, character designs, other names, streets, religion, motifs, unsourced references, external links, and see also. They are listing things such as The Boxman, 1973, inspired the dangling legs, symbolic of, yeah, you have to come and see actually the video they have on here. I'll put the link to this in the show notes. Works by Masako Bando inspired the oppressive atmosphere of the games, and he did Shikoku, 1996, Inunogami, 1996, works by Robert Bloch, Psycho, 1959, Strange Eons, 1978, works by Ray Bradbury, The Martian Chronicles, 1950, Fahrenheit 451, 1953, Something Wicked This Way Comes. Do you guys remember that one? That's a good one. Works by Jonathan Carroll, The Land of Laughs, 1980, After Silence, 1993. Works by Michael Crichton, He Who Hates Theme Parks. Oh, come on, you know him. The Andromeda Strain, 1969. Jurassic Park, 1990. The Lost World, 1995. And of course, Westworld. Oh, I did not realize how many things were. So Crime and Punishment was actually in 1866. Fyodor Dostoevsky is a basis for the basic storyline of Silent Hill 2. The Lost World, we mentioned. Works by James Ellroy. The Black Dahlia, 1987. L.A. Confidential, 1990. Works by Jack Finney. The Body Snatchers, 1955. I Love Galesburg in the Springtime, 1963. The Woodrow Wilson Dime, 1968. From Time to Time, 1995. Works by Thomas Harris. The Silence of the Lambs. A Movable Feast, 1964, by Ernest Hemingway. How is it? Wait, what? There's a building named after the book in Central Silent Hill. Oh, yeah. So all of these, by the way, are even the tiniest little mentions in the games, if you're wondering, because I could go on and on forever here. But like I said, if you're geeky like that, it's interesting. I'll skip ahead. Works by Stephen King, Carrie, The Shining, The Mist, The Running Man, Pet Sematary, Thinner, Misery. Dean Koontz, who was always next to Stephen King on the shelves at my house. The Face of Fear, The Vision, The Voice of Night, Phantoms, The Door to December, Watchers, Hideaway, Mr. Murder. Ira Levine, Rosemary's Baby, The Boys from Brazil. My goodness. Lie to Me, Cul-de-Sac. Hell House by Richard Matheson, Duel. Swan Song, Stinger, Mine, Fan Mail, Night Vision, Portrait of Jenny, Long After Summer, Plastic. Good Lord. These, I love when people get so into it that they make these Wikipedias, because there's just so many things in here. I have to skip to the children's books. Thumbelina, Hans Christian Andersen, is featured as a static music box in the music box puzzle. I remember that one. Oh. The Little Mermaid inspired symbolism in the series, referenced in the music box puzzle, and featured as the Little Mermaid music box. The Wizard of Oz, it's inspired symbolism in the series. Rapunzel, featured as a static music box. Cinderella, as part of the Martian travel puzzle. Snow White, symbolism. My goodness. Works by Junji Ito, horror manga collection. Daijiro Morohoshi inspired the concept of the other world. Works by William Shakespeare. It's mentioned in one of the puzzles, Twelfth Night and the Tempest, Romeo and Juliet, The Tragedy of Hamlet, A Tragedy of Othello, King Lear, Macbeth. Works by Dario Argento, the master of Italian gore horror. Suspiria, Inferno, Demons. Works by David Cronenberg. David Fincher inspired some themes. The Wizard of Oz, David Lynch, Eraserhead, Dune, Blue Velvet, Lost Highway. Okay, so not necessarily Twin Peaks. Jacob's Ladder. They've got quite the paragraph here for that. Do you want to hear it? Oh, I'm going to give it to you. The film has many settings in common with Silent Hill. The hospital and the subway. In the first game, Harry Mason dies and everything was just a hallucination in the bad ending. And additionally, the same anti-drug poster from Jacob's Ladder is found in the first game's texture files. The second game, James Sunderland shares the initials of Jacob Singer, and his jacket is very similar to Jacob's U.S. Army jacket. I remember the jacket. There is also a Lynn House key, which refers to Adrian Lynn, the director of Jacob's Ladder, In the third game, Heather Mason must find Bergen Street platform. There's a scene of Jacob, strapped to a gurney, going down a nightmarish hospital hall that is reminiscent of the scene in which James is wheeled through a hall on a gurney in Brookhaven Hospital. Among other things, the twitch that many monsters do with their heads, one example being Valtil, was inspired by the film. The hospital scene in the movie depicts a bicycle's wheel turning by itself, similar to a wheelchair scene in Brookhaven's basement by Heather, or the wheelchair Harry sees in the alley in the first game. A few moments later, a humanoid is seen in a sort of frame or box, which has also been seen in the series, such as the corpses in Pyramid Head's Lair. Oh, you don't want to run into that one. And around bosses like Marion Abstract Daddy. They mention Stanley Kubrick, Full Metal Jacket, Lolita, A Clockwork Orange, The Shining, Alejandro Jodorowsky, El Topo, The Holy Mountain, my goodness, Terry Gilliam, 12 Monkeys, Alice, Betty Blue, The Exorcist 3, Event Horizon, The Cell. Yeah, that had to be a way later one. Solaris. So now we're getting into later ones. Fantasma d'Amour. Kindergarten Cop. Appears to, Midwich Element. Oh, I remember Midwich Elementary School. You always have to go in there. Appears to have been modeled after the Astoria School in the film. The Walking Dead. Oh my goodness. Angel Heart. Yeah. Shawshank Redemption. Alfred Hitchcock. I could go on. Okay, I'll stop. I'm just geeking out on the details. Are you intrigued by this series yet? All of these little Easter eggs in the games? It's pretty trippy. I think I told you everything I was going to tell you about it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm just clicking through here. Was there something else? Nope, I think that was it. And I just went into a time warp where last time I checked, I had only been talking for about 30 minutes, and now all of a sudden it's an hour and 37. Wow. I think I just went into an alternate dimension where 5 minutes was an hour. How the hell did that happen? Well, we'll see what gets trimmed off when I edit it. I hope you found this interesting. I hope it made you want to look into it further. I haven't decided yet what to do for the next podcast, but I hope you'll join me. Find me on Twitter at PodPinky. Hit me up at PinkySwearPress.com. That's my main site. Please check out my new novel, Dark Wings. Urban fantasy, romantic suspense, if you will. It's a bit supernatural. Male-male romance. It's got a vampire in there. And something else that I don't want to explain because it'll spoil it. Available on Amazon.com in all countries. Paperback, Kindle, Kindle Unlimited. Dark Wings. S. Reut. And for my immortals out there, my children, as Michelle is, my children, I'm on the last book in the omnibus. We're getting there. I want to say it'll make a nice Christmas present, but maybe even before that. But just know that proofreading 5 books is going to be a bitch. But thank you for your patience. I was starting to work on that tonight, and my fingers just can't do it. So I decided to talk instead. All right. If somebody knows an excellent voice-to-text program that can actually understand me, I think I might need one in the future if I'm going to write. And that's me finished, I think. Yes. Yes, I think we'll call that a night. And don't let the pyramid head bite. Oh, but wait. Edited to add. Disappointingly, I didn't actually go into a time warp. It was just a big, long, almost, well, definitely 30-minute flatline in Audacity, my program. And I have no idea why. Could it be aliens? It couldn't be anything else. No, really, it was just some sort of program malfunction. Just thank God it didn't eat the entire recording. Okay, now I'm done for real. Poo-poo-poo-pow.